It's Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Last night, Vladimir Putin won a referendum that could potentially keep him in power for another 16 years, which might seem like a long time until you realize that we're stuck with Trump for at least another 4 months. In an interview yesterday with Fox Business, Donald Trump said that the coronavirus would, quote, sort of just disappear one day, I hope, which ironically is the exact same thing that most voters are saying about him. Senator Charles Grassley said that if President Trump can show more empathy, his polls will go up. If Republicans are hoping to see Donald Trump make a comeback by pretending to care about people, all they have to do is watch his acting in Home Alone 2 and realize they need a much better plan. Against the advice of environmentalists, Donald Trump will be presiding over a fireworks display at Mount Rushmore tomorrow. Wow, large crowd, explosions, and national monuments. The last time all that happened, Trump went to his bunker, not South Dakota. Students in Tuscaloosa, Alabama are contracting coronavirus after participating in so-called COVID parties, where they bet to see who can catch the virus first, proving that even the smarter people in Alabama are too stupid to not be in Alabama. The much-hyped premiere of Hamilton on Disney Plus is tomorrow. For the millions of Americans who've been hoping to see the acclaimed musical, it only took 2.7 million infections to make it happen. Thanks, pandemic! Due to the rise in COVID-19 in the U.S., the NHL is looking to host its postseason entirely in Canada. There you go, Trump supporters. He finally did something to make foreigners go back to the country they came from. Speaking of sports, training camps for the coronavirus condensed baseball season have now opened, making this the first time teams will have the opportunity to literally win or die trying. It's been announced that Beavis and Butthead are being rebooted by Comedy Central for two new seasons. Considering teens today, this is going to look more like a documentary than a cartoon. After receiving a lot of criticism for promoting a concert in Texas for this weekend, Vanilla Ice has decided to postpone the show to a more appropriate date. Personally, I'd go with 1990, which is the only appropriate date anyone should see a Vanilla Ice concert. Now, let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily Cast and Crew Roundtable. Stay safe.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello. Happy Thursday. And as always, I'm joined by some of our family members from TMI Hollywood. Also, in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by a flight attendant who will be talking to us about the current state of air travel. So stay tuned for that. Let's say hello to everybody watching at home and listening to our podcast. Let's start with you, Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm coming at you if you're watching the video from beautiful Joshua Tree National Park.
How's the weather there?
Toasty.
Oh, nice. Shada.
Hello, viewers who can see me and those who can't. Hello.
Joe.
Hi, everyone. I'm in 1976 at Disneyland at the America Sings Pavilion.
Chris.
What, guys?
Jess?
Yeah, follow me at the Jess Ellis on Twitter.
And Emma.
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
Okay, so let's get started. This morning, Donald Trump held an early press conference to celebrate the new month job report. That said that 4.8 million Americans went back to work between May 12th and June 11th, dropping unemployment numbers from 13.3% to 11.1%. These may seem like very encouraging numbers until you dive a little deeper into them. So tonight we wanted to discuss how announcing 5 million people going back to work could actually hurt Donald Trump's chances of getting reelected. It's fair to say that if the economy got better before November, it would be a boost to Trump's chance, right? It would seem obvious that an improved economy would help Trump the same way that a bad economy hurts him. But there are some signs that not everything is so good. One of the areas that gets classified in the jobs report is whether job losses in the previous month could be categorized as temporary or permanent. In April and May, 88.6 of those losses were classified as temporary. This past month, that number dropped 10% to 78.6%, meaning that nearly 22% of the people who have lost their jobs last month, which translates to 600,000 jobs, will not have a job to go back to when this is over. Of the people here on the panel who were laid off from jobs, are you still considered to be furloughed or have you been let go? Does anybody want to talk about this? Emma.
So I had two jobs from which I was furloughed. One of them I still haven't heard from. The other one I've been formally let go. Like that job just doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Which is fine, that was the restaurant job and I was very hesitant about the idea of going back to to serving people anyway. But also it's a little frustrating and weird.
Okay, anybody else want to add anything to that? Okay. Another unencouraging piece of data from the job numbers is the inequality of people going back to work. According to this past month's report, white American employment dropped from nearly 13% in May to 10.1% in June. While Asian Americans are at 13.8%, Hispanic Americans at 14.5%, and African Americans at 15.4%. For a president whose base is almost entirely made up of white Americans, how can these numbers be at all encouraging for the Trump campaign? Any thoughts? Chris?
I don't know if it's just, to me, it's just like, I think one of the problems is like, you know, anytime you speak on, or you speak, let me put it more personally. When I've spoken to Trump supporters, like jobs is the biggest thing. And they always like to point out to me that, you know, he created the most jobs for African Americans than any president has in the past and probably will in the future. So, you know, with these kind of numbers showing, I just wonder if those people are going to have that same energy when they have that argument.
I think that he has to spin the numbers the best way that he can to his advantage, since jobs, like Chris said, since jobs has been what he has been successful on, it is the economy is what he's run on this whole time, as being his shining thing that he's accomplished in during his presidency. But I think that this is really going to ultimately hurt him with his own constituents and with the others, because we're going to see permanent job loss, not just furlough. That's where we're shifting. Like Emma's job was she was given notice as what's going on. I think that we're going to start to see that in the next couple months too. As things are reopening, we're going to see what jobs are going to be kept and which are going to be completely eliminated and what jobs will be created. I think there will be some new jobs created because there will be creation for the safety precautions that will have to take place in every avenue that is going to be open. But I think there'll be shifting of people who are currently employed into those roles as opposed to new hires, if that makes sense.
Okay, Jess?
Yeah, plenty of room in the market for people making masks. Like, mm-hmm. there's always going to be jobs, and it's not the president's really responsibility to generate jobs. But I think any way this goes, it's a win-win for Donald Trump, because where he sits right now, it's still a really super long runway till November. And more than likely, stuff's going to improve. So they'll paint the comeback tale, even if it's not, like Shayna's right about, there's going to be a shit ton of jobs that are just permanently lost. But they'll just paint a comeback tale. Oh, we came back this amount of percent or whatever. You can spin those numbers any way you want. Plus, if the civil unrest continues, they can just spin that. I'm the president that's going to keep you safe. Joe Biden won't. So it's win-win for Donald Trump at this point.
Okay. The bigger question is that even with nearly 5 million jobs being gained in a month, that still leaves over 30 million people out of work. How do you think they're receiving Trump's message today about how great the stock market and jobs have rebounded? I mean, some of you are part of that group, so taking away how you personally feel about Trump, how do you feel about any leader telling you how great things are looking right now? Can this kind of self-promotion backfire for Trump? Anybody? Jess?
Nobody wants to do it. I'll take a stab at it. I don't think it's going to go bad for Trump. I mean, this is his typical thing where he says something and it backfires. Like, that's the story of his presidency. Like, he's not really good at getting things done. Yet, for some reason, it's like onwards and upwards. So I don't think this is going to hurt him at all.
So let me ask you this, Jess, just, you know, your own personal opinion. So do you think he's going to be reelected then in November?
I don't know. It's really hard to say at this point. Yeah. I think if the civil unrest continues, yeah, he's definitely getting reelected.
Interesting point. Okay. Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think I agree with Jess a little in the sense that, like, he's so weirdly Teflon. He says terrible things, does terrible things, does not handle things correctly, does not seem to make or do, you know, a lot of impact to help even his own, like, supporters in a lot of ways. And they're still like, that's my guy. And it's the strangest thing. Like, I don't.
Yeah. It's not just that. It's like, well, he did it again, I guess. Yeah. You know, it's like the, like, problem child.
Yeah. Like,
he's just a problem child. It's what you're used to. You're like, yeah. It's not shocking at this point. So nobody's really that upset about it.
Which is frustrating when you are upset about it, because it's, you know, it's things that are impacting people in huge ways that are seeming to be ignored. Like, not, you know, from everybody on this panel with regards to, you know, employment or so many other things. And I just don't get how people aren't more mad, but I know larger reasons and stuff like that. But part of me is just like, he's fucking stupid and bad at his job. Why doesn't anyone see that?
And there's really not much. I'm sorry, Emma, but I just want to interject before I lose it. There's not much for the president to do. Like I said, they don't do a whole lot. All he's got to do is sit there and take credit for stuff when stuff is good and shut the F up when stuff is bad. And he'd be fine.
Emma?
Yeah, that was actually a little bit of the point I was about to make, that the president doesn't create jobs. Like, he can guide the economy a little bit, but, like, it's not really up to him, especially the present economy. The president, whoever's in the Oval Office, lays the seeds for a future economy whenever that comes up. Also, there's, for a long time now, like, well before this economic downturn, the stock market has not necessarily reflected how the average American is doing economically. So, you know, those numbers have been working for him before. People have been taking those numbers and saying that it's a good economy, even though there's a growing wage gap and, like, there's all these things, you know, it hasn't really affected him before.
Okay, Chris.
One quick comment. You know, if I were him, I would be a little bit worried, you know what I mean? Because, like, right now, the people who are probably going to be creating the most jobs are the 1%, people who still have money that can, you know, build factories and you know, build these companies and things like that. These are the ones that are going to create jobs. And, you know, I don't know if I'm, you know, if I'm some guy like Tyler Perry who, like, builds a big ass studio and employ like 200,000 people, I'm not going to want this guy taking credit for it. So he might want to take it easy, because those are people that he kind of depends on right now to be on his side. And, you know, if he's trying to take all the credit, some people might not be a fan of that, especially if they got egos themselves.
Okay. I also want to talk about a study that came out yesterday. According to the study, after surveying a significant amount of Americans who have tested positive for COVID-19, the one thing a majority of them had in common, 70% to be exact, was that they all either went back to work in the last 2 months or they never stopped going to work. With there being nearly a million new cases since June 2nd, do you think that a majority of Americans who have been laid off or at least hesitant about going back to work? So any thoughts on that? Go ahead, Jess.
I just take issue with the question. 70% of them either didn't go back to work or did go back to work.
I can go back and read that part for you. Give me 1 second. Sorry, my tablet just went completely blank. Of the people that got sick, 70% of them were either went back to work or they just never stopped working. So yeah, so 70% of the people that were sick, people that just haven't stopped, pretty much. They've been working. Yeah. Jess, can you hear me?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that because I
clarify. Sorry, I thought you were going to say something. That was awkward. Okay, sorry. A little technical difficulties here on my end too. Okay, Shayna.
Well, I mean, that makes sense that they would be those people because they're around more people. They're exposed to, you know, I mean, because those are the people who are working during that time. It's like people in the Amazon warehouses and mm-hmm. things like that. Those people were, you know, exposed, or people working in meat plants, right? The people who didn't stop working, and then hospital workers, mm-hmm. and then the people in the grocery stores. So it just makes sense because that was where people were. They were around, exposed to the most humans at the time. And I think that that's what happens when we all are going to go back to work. I mean, I was kind of panicked today because I was at a store and there were 10 people in the store. And I was like, and it was not a big store. It was a cell phone store, and I had an N95 mask on, and I was still like, okay, I hope they get somebody out of here. You know, I mean, because that's the threshold, isn't it? Like large groups, 10 or more, I mean, 5 or more, any group can be the group. Because the statistics that you were giving earlier was 1 in 10, right? 1 in 7 mm-hmm. of us in Los Angeles could have this within the next month. 1 in 7, 1 in 10, based on what our mayor said this morning.
1 in 70. Mm-hmm.
1 in 7. There you go. 70. So, I mean, mm-hmm. that's scary.
Yeah. Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think it's going to lead to a shift that we're already seeing, though, in how people work.
Yeah.
Where so many jobs are going to now continue to be work from home jobs. Like I work normally in like a TV studio with people, but they've been shooting the show remotely with the hosts at their houses and everybody just working over, you know, some kind of video chat thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if it stays that way, at least for a very, very long time. But that obviously will have an impact on the building. You know, people work in the building, janitorial staff, you know, could they lose their jobs? It's a whole domino effect of a lot of people, not just in, you know, entertainment, but all sorts of office-based in particular jobs. And then just as far as the number of people who got it because they had to keep working, that sucks. I hate that that happened to those people. It feels unfair in a big way.
Okay, Jets.
First of all, I wonder where the other 30% got it. And second, I hate stats like this because they're often misleading. Like if you think about it, you'd say, well, 100% of people who got it also got food from a grocery store. You know what I mean? Like we don't know exactly that they got it at work, do we? Like did they trace all 70% of these people and say, well, they definitely got it at work?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. It's really hard to quantify numbers like this, and the numbers itself can paint a misleading story. So I'm always like skeptical. Yeah. About
that. I mean, that seemed to be the common denominator, and I guess like the way that I see it too.
Right, like I said, the common denominator is like they all ate food. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like people that are obviously, you know, for example, grocery store workers that come in contact with so many people all the time, obviously. Yeah. Will have a higher, you know, risk of getting it. I actually have one very important question that I want to ask you guys. With unemployment insurance set to expire at the end of July, if it does, will more people have to reluctantly prioritize finding work over concerns for their health? What do you guys think about that? Chris?
It all depends on, you know, their status before. Like some people were able to, you know, some people made enough money to where they had savings and they, you know, keep waiting. But let's be honest, especially here, how many people actually were able to do that? LA, you know, a place like LA, New York, these are very expensive places to live. And most people here are renters, not being people are owners. So like, you know, they're probably going to have to just go to work. And, you know, as scared as some people may be, like, we're just going to have to put on a brave face and go find a job. And the thing is, too, most of the jobs that are probably going to be even available are jobs where you're in contact with a lot of people, like working in shipping warehouses or working at a grocery store or driving Uber, you know, things where they put you in close proximity with other people that could potentially have the virus. But, you know, at some point, you know, bills got to get paid. You know, they can only let us, you know, not evict people from their apartments and things of that nature for so long. But, you know, these are still, you know, apartment buildings are still businesses. And if the person that owns them is a business person, so they got to do what's best for them. And money coming in is what's best for them, not, you know, not. So, yeah, we're going to be have to be brave very, very soon.
Yeah. Shayna?
Yeah, the subsidy ending, I mean, just to be clear, it's just the extra
right
ending. If you still have insurance, you could still get your money. It will be a lot less, but you could still get that money. But
extra, right?
What'd you say?
The $600 a week extra. Is that
That the government subsidy.
Right.
But I think that we are gonna have those of us who are in customer service, that like Chris is saying, we are going to have to go back to doing that. In what capacity, how that's going to work. I mean, whether customer service is waiting tables or being a hostess at a restaurant or whatever, or working at a hotel or whatever, you're still in customer service, working with the people, doing a Lyft or an Uber, you're still that, still customer service. Those jobs, we're going to have to start doing that, or Grubhub, finding ways to make money where we can we're going to have to interface with the public, because those are most of the jobs that you can pick up and the ones that you can walk away from as an actor. Those are the kinds of jobs that we also need to have, AKA a disposable job or something that is flexible, something that will work with you. And if they won't work with you, you're willing to walk away from to do what you want to do in the world. So I think we're going to have to bite the bullet and either drive an Uber or Grubhub or something.
Yeah. Elizabeth, and then we'll finish this topic with Jess. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think people are, it's, you know, reluctantly going to have to go back to work, because unfortunately so many people are, the statistic I remember reading or the information I remember reading is like you're only $400, like a $400 emergency can throw all your finances off of balance and into chaos for like millions of people. And I can't imagine what this has done to those people and beyond, you know, let alone just other medical expenses and things like that. And that's, you know, I won't go off on the tangent about why I believe in free healthcare for that reason, but that's a big part of it. But it's, people are definitely going to be stuck with having to go back to a job or finding a job. And a lot of those lists you guys have said are going to be people facing interactive jobs in that sense.
Jess?
I gave this advice to a friend who was kind of in despair about not working. And I said, and not knowing if their job was going to be there when they come back, I said, now's a great time while you're being paid to stay at home to try to retrain for something else. I mean, you're going to have to take responsibility for yourself at some point. In the short term, sure, the government is going to be there to help you out a little bit, but in the long run, it's up to you. And like, this is a reminder in our 21st century lives here that the world doesn't really work like this. In the olden days when, you know, the threat of viruses, pandemics, floods, you know, famine and things like that were very real, people pooled their resources and they stuck close to home and with their family. You know, show of hands on the panel, how many people live way the F away from their family? You know, probably most of, yeah. So it's like we're living in a very unrealistic time when we're faced with very realistic world problems. So that's something else to think about.
Okay. So it's time for today's Just One Question. I'm going to pick some of the topics from the top of the show and ask you one question about that topic. Against medical advice, Trump is hosting large event firework displays tomorrow at Mount Rushmore and on the 4th in Washington, D.C. Here's my question. With one quarter of all the world's coronavirus infections and deaths, over 30 million people out of work, and racial and social unrest throughout the country, what do Americans have to celebrate on the 4th of July this year? Joe.
All right. You know, I know a lot of us don't feel very patriotic. We are divided in our ideologies and things like that, but let's talk about some things that we can feel patriotic about. First of all of our troops, all of everybody who served and who served before, I'd like to celebrate them. I'd like to celebrate the fact that I live in a country where a reality TV star can be president. I mean, we may not like it, but that can happen. And all the craziness that's going on, and it may not look it, there's still opportunity. There's still many freedoms. I mean, we sit here on this panel every day and pretty much, you know, except for Jess, we shit on the president. You know, I do sometimes, less than most people, but that's what we do. And we have the freedom to do that. So I think that's some stuff to celebrate about. Just because the country isn't the way that you feel it is right now, you know, but you have the power and the ability, and you watch everyone that goes out and protests because there's something that they don't like. And that's something else that we can do. So I think those are the things that we can celebrate for the 4th of July.
Okay, Emma.
Yeah, Joe already covered a lot of it, damn. But I celebrate less what the country currently is and more of what I know it can be. It's probably just me having watched too many episodes of The West Wing. But, you know, it's so nice to think of what the system that we have is capable of producing, even if that's not what it's producing right now. On a personal level, I'm also celebrating the fact that I got a new mini grill and I really like burgers.
There you go. Shayna.
I think the 4th of July is great. I mean, the fact that we decided that we were going to do this whole other thing, you know, separate ourselves from a monarchy and create a democracy here. And we've been experimenting with that democracy for over 200 years, and we've gone pretty far and done pretty great. I think that's a lot to celebrate. We've also helped other countries find democracy that we've been a part of and party to. I think that's also pretty cool that we've helped do that as a nation, especially to countries where it was pretty despairing without it before. So even if it's not the same as ours, that there's some kind of democracy, that the people have some kind of voice. And the fact that it may not be perfect, but we do get to say something in this world and have an effect on our government if we so choose to vote.
Okay, Elizabeth?
Yeah, in line with what Joe was saying, I think it's the freedom to not celebrate is cool. Like, I don't want to necessarily celebrate things, but I have the freedom to do that. Or any other people have the freedom to celebrate the 4th of July if they want. And that's great, because you could live in a country where, you know, supporting the country is compulsory. And if you don't, you're in deep trouble.
North Korea!
Yeah, North Russia. You know, speaking out the way people have on this panel, for and against, doesn't matter. People speaking out in the streets, that's the best. That's probably the part I would truly celebrate, is that the people, you know, people have taken to the streets and protested and marched for something they believe so strongly in, that they're risking life and death to fight for it. And that's, I think, the biggest embodiment of what people want to think of when they think of, you know, America and freedom.
Chris?
Well, first I want to say I love you guys to death. I'm glad that some of you do appreciate our fellow service members and the people who are still currently serving. That's really awesome. But just be careful, because, you know, Americans haven't fought for American freedom in a long time. Just keep that in mind before we get too patriotic. But what I will say is that I am happy that we can celebrate, because, like, this is the voting year. This is like a very important year, and I think a lot of people are finally waking up and getting involved. So we can celebrate that. Now, this is just my belief. I don't know how much is true. We'll see come November and this next coming year. But I think a lot of more people are waking up and getting involved, and people are willing to do research and are starting to implement the change to maybe get closer to the America that we were striving to be from the beginning. You know, we got a lot of time on our hands now, so a lot more people can be within their thoughts and hopefully make decisions for a better life for us and those of us who plan on having a family, their children, and hopefully get them involved so where they can make better decisions for their future and then on. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing that we can celebrate right now, is that this is a great election year, and a lot more people are on notice and are getting involved.
Okay, Jess, can you hold on to that thought? Kendall's been waiting to get, come on. So I'll see you guys back in a few minutes. Let's get her on. Hi, Kendall, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Well, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem.
So with the long holiday weekend upon us, some Americans are deciding to get back on planes. So we thought it would be great to have someone like you on who can tell our audience what to expect if they're going to be getting on a flight anytime soon. So again, thanks for being here. How long have you been a flight attendant for?
6 years.
6 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, were you furloughed in the beginning of the pandemic?
Not necessarily furloughed. They just took away our trips and we just weren't working. But we had the option to go on, I guess, a voluntary time off.
Oh, okay. So when did you start traveling again? When did you start going back to work?
Yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you guys have to go through some, like, COVID training, before you started flying again? Or
not necessarily physical training, but we get, they call them bulletins, like, every day. So we just got, like, a bunch. Like, I had 50 bulletins when I logged into work today. So we just have to read them all and then do them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for people that are planning on traveling sometime soon, what are some changes that they can expect that you can tell us about?
So how the airlines are like really big on delays, now they are taking delays to clean the planes thoroughly. Mm-hmm. So I would say expect like maybe up to 30 minutes delay for them to clean like all the high touch areas. Mm-hmm. Wearing a mask at all times. Even on the plane when you board in security at like all times, getting yelled at at the flight attendants and other passengers about wearing your mask and washing your hands. And a lot of people are surprised that airlines are not social distancing with like the 6 feet, but it's kind of like impossible to without, I guess, losing revenue. So I guess be like prepared not to social distance as far as like, you know, 6 feet behind each other and everything. So that's basically it. It's not really much has changed.
I know some airlines, you know, they were like not selling the middle seat. And is that still the case or?
American Airlines does it. I believe Southwest does it, but Spirit, okay. Delta, United, they don't. No.
They don't do that. Okay.
No, no, no.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the number of passengers increase? Well, I mean, you said you just went back yesterday. So,
yes.
I mean, so, how was it? Was it busy? Because I've noticed like a lot of my friends have been traveling recently more.
Very full, yes.
Than they were, 2 months ago. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I haven't worked in 2 months. In my last flight 2 months ago, I had two passengers on a plane that holds 228 people. And then today I was on the same plane and all 228 seats were full. So people are still fine.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting.
I know.
Have you found that people have been nicer, more compliant overall? Or no? Or the opposite of that?
More now. Really? Right. Because, I mean, you lose control when you come on the plane. You lose control going to TSA. You're not driving the plane. Put your seatbelt on. Put your phone in airplane mode. You're being told what to do all the time. And now you have to wear a mask too. So everyone's just, it's a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of tension.
What I know your job is very, very difficult. I think
it can be.
Pre-pandemic, you know, being on a plane, I've seen how they're treated sometimes by passengers.
Yeah.
And I do follow passenger shaming on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
I think you guys deal with it. They're just incredible. What advice can you give to people to make your job a little bit easier?
That we're doing our job. Honestly, if you didn't have to put your seatbelt on, I wouldn't tell you. If you didn't have to put your phone in airplane mode, I wouldn't tell you. If you didn't have to wear your mask, I wouldn't tell you. So I guess just knowing that we're literally doing our job for your safety too. And it's not just, for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's for you, you know. So I think that just being patient with us while we're just enforcing or informing them about the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I have one last question and then I'm going to bring the panel on. They might have some questions for you, including your brother. Are there people that you work with that have not felt safe going back? And do you feel safe? How safe do you feel being in the air?
So I have more anxiety now. I mean, I had anxiety flying before this because people fly in any condition. But now with coronavirus, I have anxiety, and I was actually talking to my crew today. We're all agreeing that we don't want to be here like at all. Like it's not safe at all, especially when the flight was full and people aren't wearing their masks. People will eat and drink the whole flight, just not, you know, just to not wear their masks. So
Okay. Well, let's bring the panel back on and let's see if they have any questions for you.
Hi, Chris.
Does anybody have any questions for Kendall that they want to ask? Elizabeth.
Yeah, like how supported do you feel by your airline in terms of how they're like trying to maybe protect you or even support you when it comes to like passengers acting out about COVID restrictions?
Not as supported as I feel we should be. I feel like we shouldn't have the middle seat. I feel like we should enforce social distancing with the boarding and deplaning. I feel like they're not really as strict about people wearing masks. Like they say you can't board, but they still let them on. They're not strict about like having wipes on a plane or gloves or just cleaning supplies and everything like that. So I feel like they could do more. I do, definitely.
Okay. Anybody else? Thought I saw somebody else. Oh, Shayna, go ahead.
What about your own personal, your PPE? Are you responsible for that or are you provided materials?
We had to raise hell for our company to provide us with masks, but we did get them. But if we lose them, we don't get them back. We have to provide our own masks. So we're able to do that. They're letting us bring our own cleaning supplies now because they didn't even want us to bring our own cleaning supplies. So basically we're left to our own devices, basically. They gave us a mask, but that's about it.
Wow. I've heard you're not the only airline. That's why I asked that question, because I've heard from other flight attendant friends of mine that this is a consistent thing. So I'm just wondering how they're going to manage your exposure in addition to ours.
Right. Yeah, it's like all the flight attendants are basically like, we probably already got it, you know? Every flight attendant I come in contact with, it's like, oh, around February, around March, like I went down with the flu or whatever. So they give us a mask and just throw us through the wolves, basically. Figure it out.
Joe.
we're not flying to Europe currently, but there's flights that are longer and there's flights that are shorter. I mean, when we start talking about even just going cross country where it's 5 hours or going to like, you know, big ones that are like 17 hours and stuff like that. I mean, how do you even control it in that situation? Like 17 hours, there's got to be like everyone at some point or another taking their mask off.
And I've thought about that. I'm like, you can't, because I had my mask on today for, I want to say maybe 10 hours. I had 3 flights today. I was dying. I was like, my ears hurt. I didn't want to take my mask off to eat and drink because I'm like, I didn't want to breathe any of the air. So I was hungry. I was thirsty. I really don't think you can control it. I don't think there's so much you can do and no more. Yeah.
And Chris.
So I have a 2-part question.
Okay.
So you just went through your regulations and like how what you've seen just from your airline. Have you seen anybody else's, like, you know, if they got like better PPE or if they seem to be, you know, holding people more to a standard? And also, in your opinion, with these flights being this way, with the standard low, how soon do you think the flights are going to go back to being reduced as we were, you know, 2 weeks ago?
Right. I think with American, Southwest are the two airlines that I know are not doing the middle seat, and they like force you to go row by row when you deplane and get on. I think Southwest and American are doing as much as they could do in that aspect. And then your second question, I'm sorry.
Second question is with, you know, some of the airlines having like subpar standards on like keeping people safe, how soon do you think we're going to go back to having like reduced?
Oh, yes. I don't know. Honestly, don't know. I was actually discussing that today. That's like the only thing we talk about on the plane now. I don't know. There's no end in sight. There's like not even a glimmer of hope, honestly, for the airline industry. Everyone's afraid that they're going to be furloughed. It's just like after 9/11, you know, like mom worked for 30 years for United. After 9/11, they furloughed everyone just like that. Like it's we're dispendable. So they call us essential. So, but at any time, I feel like it could go under, especially with the airlines going under when it first started. I feel like it could happen. So I honestly just don't know. And no one really knows.
Jess?
Can you tell us something extremely embarrassing about Chris? Like maybe a bad habit
That I wouldn't know. I wouldn't tell you if I did.
There's the truth.
Any more questions?
I don't have a question, but I would like to say, sis, your baby hair is on point. I love it.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you so much for showing up and going to work.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kendall, for coming on. I really appreciate it. And please stay safe.
Oh, thank you. Yes, you guys do.
Okay.
Bye.
Jess, I want to go back to you real quick. Did you want to say something before she came on?
Yeah, just about the 4th of July thing. Like, should we be celebrating it? Is that what you're asking? Like that question? Yeah. What should we be celebrating? I think this 4th of July, maybe we should all remember that no matter what social issues we're having right now, no matter how racist or built on racism this country is that people think, the way it stands right now, there are people from all over the world that are clamoring to get here because they don't see it that way. They see this as a land of opportunity, which it truly is. And there are a lot of people in Hong Kong that would love to trade places with us right now. So this 4th of July, think about all those people around the world that are struggling for what we have. And think about how petty the problems that we're bringing up now really are in the grand scheme of things. We got a global pandemic and people are dying because they want to be in our spot. So I think there's a lot to be grateful for on 4th of July here.
Okay. And we're going to miss having you guys over, by the way, you know, this year, but we're going to be responsible and we're not having anybody over. So, okay, I have one more question. So one of the bigger events for this weekend is the release of the film version of the Broadway hit Hamilton on Disney Plus tomorrow. I've got my Skylar Sisters Hamilton shirt on. Lin-Manuel Miranda has said that Hamilton, the show, was the byproduct of the hope created by the election of Barack Obama in 2008. In fact, he premiered the title track to the show, Alexander Hamilton, at a celebration of spoken word poetry at the White House in early 2009, before he had even decided to make this into a full musical. If you've never seen that video, I highly recommend you YouTube it. It's fantastic. So my question is, could this show have been created during the last 4 years, or is it a time capsule of the Obama years? Elizabeth.
I think it could have still been created. I just think the tone of it would be very, yes, very different. I think it would probably focus, it definitely touches on, in a lot of ways, you know, Alexander Hamilton being an immigrant, mm-hmm, and making an impact. And I think that would play an even bigger part than it does in the musical as we have it now. I think that focus would shift to that. You'd still probably have the love triangle and the rivalry with Burr, obviously, but I think I think particularly with the Burr stuff, that would probably change a lot of how it's approached. Mm-hmm. And maybe Lafayette would have a bigger role. I don't know.
I like what you said about the tone, though, definitely. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, is incredible when you watch the show.
I haven't seen it. No spoilers.
Okay. You're going to watch it, though, right, Jess?
Spoilers for a 200-plus-year-old event. Sorry.
There's the joke. Somebody got it.
Emma.
So I'm about to go full nerd on you guys. Lin-Manuel Miranda is like a content creation machine. He's constantly putting out things. And one of the common themes throughout all of his work is that it's always full of hope. All of it is like about how you have the opportunity to make your life better, about going for things and like really striving to make the world a better place. That's consistent through all of his work. So I'm sure a lot of it would be the same. Like there'd be a lot of similarities, especially because at the end of the day, Alexander Hamilton's life, it was his life. Like there's a certain set of events that happened. But I think that also you see a lot of that in terms of what Lin-Manuel Miranda himself watches. He's also a huge fan of the West Wing, and like he loves things that are really hopeful about America, especially. I do think, though, that if you look at the Hamilton mixtape that came out just as Trump was coming into office, that does have a little bit more of a tinge of anger and a little bit more of like a tinge of like, hey, like the people who created this country were like, they weren't the establishment. They were some punk kids who wanted to make the world better for everyone. Whether or not the founding fathers actually did that, meh. But that was like the thrust of it. So I think that you'd still have mostly the same thing, but like Elizabeth said, maybe a little bit more of the focus on the fact that he's an immigrant, maybe a little bit more anger at the way this the system is now. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys remember too when the cast called out Pence and he basically just walked away too? So I always think about that as well. But yes, definitely. I agree with you, Emma. Yes, Joe.
I think it could have been made the last 4 years. I think the big question is, would it have been made prior? Which I don't think is would have happened. You look at Broadway and you know, the big, huge, giant musical was the thing. I mean, you think about Starlight Express and that gigantic, you know, big bowl and three-level stadium and actors on roller skates and all that dressed up as trains and, you know, and cats and you know, Les Mis and all these big, huge, giant musicals. And then of course, you had the Heights and then you know, Hamilton comes along and it's a very simple set. It's a very simple wood set. You know, it's this diverse cast, and you know, the whole thing comes out in the music and the story, and not necessarily everything else that's going around it. And that's what I think is the big difference. Is I mean, if you look at, I mean, listen, people are still going to Wicked, people are still going to Cats. I mean, they made a movie from it. Obviously, that's going to happen. But I think that kind of stage show is gone away. Hamilton has proved that you can do a whole lot with a little. And that's, I think, is the question asked. Is, would it have been made 10 years ago? No. You know, 15 years ago, 20, whatever, back when they were doing those, no. Can it be made now? Yeah. I think you're still going to see it. I think you're going to see the last 4 years inspiring creators to do other stuff that's going to deal with history and that kind of message and all that. So I'm all for it.
Okay. Yeah, and I think you're right, Joe, but I just don't think there'll ever be another Hamilton, though.
There shouldn't be. Why?
There should be another Hamilton.
Have Hamilton. Do something else.
Now they'll remake it.
Andrew Lloyd Webber's Hamilton.
Data. Well, I was going to say,
all the actors are on BMX bikes.
What did you say, Joe?
I said all the actors are on BMX bikes.
But see, Joe, there was a show on Broadway that was a smaller musical and had no sets. It was called Rent. It did a little bit okay, made a little money, just a little. It only ran for the 10 years that Hamilton wasn't on Broadway and In the Heights wasn't on Broadway. It was like the precursor to both of those shows to make it possible, is what I'm saying. I'm like, Jonathan Larson made that possible for those types of productions to exist and not be a straight play versus a musical, like combine those two worlds into having a singular set and having it shift and adding in pieces like that. I mean, yes, I agree with you. The thing that I think was innovative and changed Broadway with Hamilton was the use of urban music in its score, and incorporating that and having the actors be multi-ethnic as well, playing historical characters, not casting traditionally, playing historical characters. That's what I think was really those two things together were the huge points that Hamilton shook the theater world, because, you know, you've got somebody playing Aaron Burr who's completely, you know, Leslie Odom Jr., who's an African-American guy, who's, I mean, gorgeous and amazing talent, but, you know, he looks nothing like Aaron Burr if you've seen actual photos of that guy, you know? So I'm just saying, like, that was the innovation, and he did that within The Heights, and that's thing that his message has always been, inclusivity. And so going along with what everybody's saying, yes, watch it. I'm going to be with you on Disney Plus tomorrow. I'm all set up. I'm ready.
Hey, let me ask you something real quick, since you brought up Leslie Odom Jr. Do you also cry when you hear Wait For It? I cry like a baby.
Every time. I'm cutting Shayna off, but I cry every time. Sorry, go ahead.
And it gets
every time. Every time.
That song, oh my God, forget it.
But Helpless. That's like my jam. That's like my jam. Like, that gets me in my girl mood where I'm like, yes, just want to kick it like that. It's real good. That song.
I read, sorry, real fast. My friend told me she read something that Lin-Manuel Miranda was explaining with sort of the influences that he took for the different songs, and Helpless he took from like an Ashanti Ja Rule duet. And I'm like, oh, it works so good. And I love it. Because that's, I think that's kind of why, at least on the soundtrack, he does that, like,
well, it's so in the pocket, ground. It's obvious. Yeah. It's so, like, in the pocket, like, summertime jam, like, kick back. It's so, like, relaxed. And as a musician, you're like, fuck yes, yeah, dude.
The other song that gets me is Burn, too. Forget it.
Have you seen First Burn? Oh, my God.
What?
Have you seen First Burn? It was one of the, like, Hamble Drop things he did well after the fact, but it was, like, five or six of the Elizas in a slightly reworked version of Burn, and it was honestly even better than the Broadway one, because it is like a powerful girl group. Oh man, so good. Go watch First Burn.
You guys are all gonna be getting up and be on this, but my favorite is still You'll Be Back, which is
the traditional
song in the middle of all the Hamilton, about the old school Broadway. But man, that makes me laugh every single time. I love that song.
But I think he said he also kind of did it as like a Beatles breakup song in a way, where it's sort of like, I mean, it's definitely it's not poppy standard like Beatles music at all, but like that was, I guess, an influence on that one. I do love You'll Be Back. It's so funny.
Emma, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to point out, and then Shana kind of touched on it already, that Lin-Manuel Miranda had brought diversity into Broadway and had brought non like Broadway styles into Broadway musicals. And I think one of the big things that Hamilton did was not so much bringing it into Broadway, but putting it in a white story. And just like the take on the Founding Fathers. Also, Burn gets me. Also, it's quiet uptown. I literally can't listen to it because people ask me what's wrong.
I also cry at Dear Theodosia, big time.
Burn is so good.
I felt like there's a lot of crying going on.
You'd be surprised. Yeah, I was like, well, how could this musical make me cry 2.5 hours later? Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
The thing about what's really Michael crazy Gonzalez online just said, he says, but have you heard the song Dear Baby Yoda?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I grew up not far from the Schuyler Mansion, so I grew up walking, like, knowing, like, where my mom lives is in Albany is not far from the Schuyler Mansion. So we went there as like all the time, like where Philip Schuyler was attacked by Mohawk Indians. You can put your hand in the tomahawk. Like, we all knew like all of the Schuyler tradition. So when I saw this musical, I was like, oh my God, we know this. It's our hit. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, I was acting like it's my own personal history, but it's, you know,
we're totally
doing our countries.
To jump off of what Emma had said about putting diversity into a white story, like when that first happened, I still could, it was a little bit controversial. Like, some people really had a backlash on it. And it's not now. I mean, you watch like The Great on Hulu, and it just feels normal. It feels right. It just feels absolutely right. So I you know, congratulations for Hamilton for doing that for all of us too. All right. Mm-hmm. Oh, and also listen to the Weird Al mix of Hamilton. It's fabulous.
Oh, I can't do that. I refuse to do that, Joe.
Do it. It's I love Weird Al.
Can't do that. I like Weird Al, but don't mess with Hamilton. So yesterday we talked about our panel's favorite summer songs, the playlist of which you can now find on Spotify by searching Summer Jams by TMI Daily. There you go, Joe. So today, seeing as though it is the 4th of July weekend, which is usually reserved for huge blockbuster films at the box office, we wanted to ask everyone to recommend a couple of their favorite summer blockbusters for people to watch while they are being safe at home over the holiday. Elizabeth. Let's start with you.
I came locked and loaded. I was ready. first of all, obviously, Independence Day. How do you not watch it? Will Smith, king of 4th of July, king of summer movies.
He was supposed to be at a barbecue!
So classic. And again, as I always like to point out, I know I'm not the first person, but never forget that a black guy and a Jewish guy saved the world. That's America, baby. That's how it should be. Also, Jurassic Park. Obviously, another classic. So good. Pirates of the Caribbean is a really, that very first one, before you get all whatever happens in the other ones, if you just end it there, great summer movie, great classical Hollywood filmmaking, everything gets a callback and is all full circle. It's beautifully done. I did not know it was a summer movie, but Ghostbusters is a good one. If you want to get, you know, your blend of comedy and spooky on, and of course, Jaws. Close the beaches. See, we close the beaches for the 4th of July and nobody's going to get eaten by a goddamn shark. Now, you might still get corona, but you won't get attacked by a shark.
Okay, Joe.
Oh, by the way, if you want to see Ghostbusters, it's a double feature with Groundhog Day over at the Mission Tiki Drive-In in Kona. So drive on out there for the weekend and enjoy a lovely social distancing movie. Okay, so everyone's expecting me to say Marvel. Yes, you can watch all 18 Marvel movies, and that's fantastic. But I'm going to give you something different here. I'm going to say, listen, you guys, you want to enjoy it? Watch Fast Five. It's got everything that you want. It's got a diverse cast that sticks it to the man. They're going to get a bunch of money. You're going to see lots of car explosions and safes being dragged through Brazil. And you're going to get a barbecue. It's everything that you want on your Independence Day weekend. Fast Five.
Hey, Chris.
Joe, you forgot to point out, you get to see a very sweaty Rock throughout the entire movie. He's like, never stop sweating.
You're really into moisture. That's your movie.
You know, it's Brazil. I get it. But, you know, I thought he was, you know, Polynesian, used to that kind of heat. Apparently not, because he was sweating all day. Probably cocaine. Anyway, I think the summer movie, one of them, since we were talking about Will Smith earlier, Men in Black. Come on, baby. That's just fun. That's just a good time. I think a good summer movie, of course, The Lion King. Let's just go back to the classics. You'll laugh, you'll dance, you'll cry. Come on.
And not the remake. The remake.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, oh, we're not going to go there because I can go.
I don't want to go there either.
That is a whole other show.
Right. That could literally be a full TMI daily.
Oh, that's Tuesday, everybody. Tuesday will be there.
No, that movie and I forgot my third, but I just like, I mean, pretty much any action film you can go with. But my favorite, I think, I don't know if it was a summer blockbuster because I don't think that I was like old enough to really even know what it was, but I think a good classic is like good sci-fi. You can do Total Recall. That's just fun. The original with Schwarzenegger, it still holds up. It's still a fantastic movie. And Demolition Man, if you want to go corny action movie, because it's Wesley Snipes and Sylvester Stallone going head to toe for an hour and a half, and it's just a good time.
Hey, Emma.
So the first is a more traditional summer blockbuster, Spider-Man, just the quintessential New York superhero.
Wait, which one? Which, like the Tobey Maguire?
Tobey Maguire.
Oh, okay.
Specifically the first Tobey Maguire. Not the other. Well, Spider-Man 2 is, but you know
what I guess. Yeah.
It's Tobey Maguire. It's just a great time. Very like New York bonding thing. You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. Oh, my heart. The other one is Shrek. That was a summer blockbuster. Came out in May of its year and like still holds up, still super fun. Ridiculous. I love it so much. I don't want to say how many times I've watched it.
Okay, Jess.
Continuing with the Arnold Schwarzenegger theme, Terminator 2, ultimate summer blockbuster, man. But you got to watch the first one because it's also, that's a cult classic. And then you can go from the cult classic to the blockbuster. And then two great summer movies is, I don't know if they're blockbusters, probably not. One Crazy Summer and Summer School.
Okay.
If you are going to see One Crazy Summer, I do suggest seeing Better Off Dead first. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, you got to watch Better Off Dead in the winter.
Yeah, no. Ski.
If you haven't seen Better Off Dead, though, if you haven't seen
$2. $2.
My favorite movie.
And lastly, Shayna.
I can't believe no one said it, but Independence Day for big summer blockbuster that you can watch during 4th of July is Independence Day.
I said it.
Elizabeth said it with the very first movie.
What?
Elizabeth said it with the very first movie.
I didn't hear you say that. I didn't hear you say it. I swear to God. I was
That's okay.
But I have another one. An independent film that was released during the summer was Stand By Me. And that was a great movie. If you've never seen that, that is a classic summer film. Kids figuring out stuff to do the last weekend in summer. It may be more Labor Day, but it's still a summer movie.
You guys want to see a dead body?
Yep, go looking for a dead body. Hey, I'm a murderino. I would do that. I would go and do that.
Maybe.
And I'm looking online right now, and everybody's pretty much like, you know, saying the same ones that you said: Independence Day, Terminator 2, Dark Knight. But there's one that you guys didn't mention that Danny's mentioning online, which would be my pick, and it's Dirty Dancing.
Dan would say Dirty Dancing.
What?
You weirdo.
Dirty Dancing.
It's a classic.
I saw such a great tweet that was like, if you look at Dirty Dancing from the dad's point of view, like, he's a hardworking doctor. He's just there to vacation with his family, and then his daughter gets involved in like a back alley abortion.
His first vacation in like 15 years.
Yes, yeah, first vacation.
Imagine watching that as like a 10-year-old, like when I started watching that movie, and I didn't understand like what was happening with Penny. And my mom was like, oh, she just got a stomach ache. I'm like, oh, okay.
and then someone followed that up with like, plus he had to listen to Lisa singing.
So that's our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us. We're actually going to be taking tomorrow and Monday off. So from everyone at TMI Daily, we hope everybody has a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. We will see you back here on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Don't forget to social distance and wear a mask. Wear a mask.
Mask it or casket.
Mask it up.
Mask it up. Mask it up. Everyone, we'll see you back on Tuesday.